Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. The brightest of bargains await in the unmissable Black Friday event, in-store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Stores are still open. I'm talking about Homebase. 51551, by the way, is your text number. Homebase, they've, I think, about 9 big branches in Ireland, about 70 in the UK. Apparently, they've gone into administration in the UK, and I think somebody's already bought the name. Wilko, I was reading earlier. And but in Ireland, they've gone into liquidation. Now, the doors are still open. But the website saying the company is in liquidation. Patricia Helovich. Patricia, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. What happened in your case with Homebase?
So, Joe, basically on the 7th of November, so almost 2 weeks ago, I was actually on the way back from my doctor's because I'm all sick right now. Okay. We popped into Homebase with my husband and
Which branch?
That was Nutgrove.
Nutgrove, okay.
We picked up something very small, and actually on the way back we spotted this lovely sofa bed for only €111, so great price. And we decided we would actually get one. So we were told that they were on the way into the store, but they couldn't tell us exactly when. It would be about a week. We paid with the card, and we waited for almost 2 weeks. No sign of the sofa, no contact from Homebase. At that stage, I hadn't known that anything was happening with Homebase, actually. And then we returned yesterday. I basically said, there is no sofa and I would like to get a refund if that's okay. Since there is no product and they were not in stock anymore, there weren't any on display. And that was when I was informed that unfortunately they cannot fulfill the order and also they cannot give me my money back.
And did they say why?
They said that this is basically... instructions that were given to them by the liquidators.
When you called into the shop, the door was obviously, you didn't get in through a window, Patricia. The door,
that's right.
The door was open. Yeah. You went in. If you had bought a sofa yesterday, if there had been one there, could you have taken it out the door with you once you paid for it?
Yes. So good news, Joe, is you can take anything out the door once you pay for it, but you cannot bring anything back, exchange it, or look for a refund, or no orders will be fulfilled. So it's for them. They're still trying to make money, but that's just about it.
So anyone who was in Homebase, where they're in Port Leash and Drogheda and Nutgrove, as you say, in various other parts of the country. Anyone who bought something in Homebase in the last few weeks but has not had it delivered, they will not get it. And they will not get their money back.
Exactly.
And the only people who can fulfill their money's worth in Homebase at the moment is somebody who fetches up to the store and buys product that's in the store and walks out the door. Having paid for it.
That's exactly it. And so Home Store, they're still selling, from what I saw yesterday, they're selling products exactly at the same price. As I did say to your researcher, they have some notices on display, but it's very, very difficult to spot them. They're blending in with all the other information. I missed a good few of them by the time I got to the till. So, you know, I just question the ethics of this process, because I'm left with no money, no sofa, and actually, I've tried to contact the liquidators. We got the email address and the phone number, and I still haven't heard back from them.
And is the liquidator of the Irish Home Base? Are they based in Ireland, or?
I don't know, Joe. To be honest. Their email address was set up for Republic of Ireland. So it is a designated email address.
Okay.
I got an actual automated reply.
Well, apparently the liquidator is Teneo. They're a very reputable company.
Yeah.
We've heard them on this program before as liquidators, and they are based in Ireland. But the sofa, the sofa that you paid for, it's a two-seater. Is the product still in the shop? Did you see any two-seater sofas?
No. Although when we got it 2 weeks ago, where we paid for it, we're told that the one on display could not be sold, but it wasn't there yesterday. And also, we basically were told we're not getting that product. It's not going to be delivered. It's not going to be, so that order cannot be fulfilled. And I cannot get my money back. So the sofas were not there, no.
Was 100, you said you couldn't believe the price, Patricia.
Yeah.
Was it a closing down sale?
No, because I actually did ask that question. That was my impression.
Fair play.
It's a good, attractive price. No,
yeah.
No, we were told that it's just I think it was something to do maybe with Black November, a good, attractive price. It was actually sold for the same money on the British website, so it was all
It wasn't a mistake.
Not at all.
Okay.
It's just a nice, attractive offer. Yeah.
So what do you have now from Homebase? You have a piece of paper, a receipt.
I have my receipt and pretty much best of luck. they could not help me anymore. I spent about 30 minutes in the store, spoke to two managers. They said their hands are tied. They couldn't help me. All I can do is email that.
The liquidator has instructed management not to issue refunds or fulfill pending orders.
That's right.
So if you were trustworthy enough, which you were, or anyone else, to go into Homebase in the last few weeks, to pick out a product which is going to be delivered, you paid in full, did you?
That's right, yeah, I did.
To pay in full, to get a receipt to that, in indicating that, they're saying you're caught. It's a catch-22, whereas if you went in yesterday to the shops, and bought something for €110, you could have walked out the door with it, having paid for it, obviously.
Absolutely, yeah. So once it's there, exactly, yeah. And also, from what I saw, there was information on display that the only people who might get a refund are those who had purchased faulty products.
Okay, but they're still trading. They're still taking. Yes. Did you see a cash register?
Of course, yes.
Did you see any? Did you see a credit card machine?
Absolutely, they're still taking money. Yeah,
that's what I mean. And do you see any cash in the cash register?
I didn't look that deep.
But I suspect there was more. I suspect there was more than €111 in it.
You see, that's what I said. I even offered to get something else.
Okay, so to take your credit note.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Well, you know what? Walk out with a different product, so to speak.
Yeah.
I was okay with that. They said, absolutely no. That's not an option either. And at that time, Joe, when I was standing at I counted, I think, four different families. They're actually couples and families with certain products in the trolleys or whatever. I think in the same predicament, trying to bring something back or looking for products that were never delivered.
So you can't return anything because they're not issuing refunds and they're not fulfilling pending orders.
That's right.
Regardless, did they say to you, "Oh no, that was the only sofa we had left, and someone else got it"? No.
Regardless, no. They gave me an example of people who had paid €20,000 for their kitchens, and those orders also were not fulfilled.
Wow.
They kind of wanted to make me feel better, you know, because it was only small purchase, whereas others are in worse situation.
They're saying, sorry, someone said to you, it's I know it's second.
The manager,
yeah,
one of the managers.
Okay, and you're out sick. That doesn't help in terms of income, I presume.
That's exactly my point. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it's Christmas coming, and I'm thinking about any potential customer who actually went there and purchased
bought
something
stuff,
for Christmas,
yeah.
You know. So.
Okay.
Now.
What about going to the? Did you use a credit card? Does that help?
I did actually. I tried to contact my bank. I haven't been able to do it just yet. I'm still waiting for the call from the customer service, but I'm not sure if that's an option for me. But I'm definitely exploring it.
So basically, you were on a list of creditors or unsecured creditors, that home base that the liquidators will draw up as people who were owed money first, by the way, is the revenue. They had to be paid out first, and then there'll be a list of creditors. I suspect. I suspect now. You won't be sitting, I say you'd be far, so far down that queue, you won't be sitting on a sofa, Patricia, you'd be standing,
Not for a while.
For a while.
Okay,
well, thanks.
Sorry, Joe, I understand that part of, you know, liquidation, there are very specific circumstances. Just what concerned me was they are trading, you know, the doors are open. They're selling products. It's not a liquidation sale. They're just selling products for exactly the same amount of money as they had done before. And yet, I'm told no product and no money back.
Okay.
This concerns me, you know.
Okay, Patricia. Thanks indeed. And we'll try and find out from Teneo. Is Patricia at the end of that long, long queue of unsecured creditors? Especially in light of the fact that the shops are still trading. 0818 715 815. Where's this? I've statement from AX Board Limited, Newry. Only if home-based kitchens get mentioned. Well, they have been mentioned. AX Board manufacturer, manufacturer kitchens have just been handed for home-based. We have many kitchens that have been dispatched already, in addition to the kitchens ready for dispatch that remain unpaid by home-based. AX Board is owed a substantial... Oh, God. I'm only reading this as you're hearing it. Axboard is owed a substantial amount of money by Homebase. Axboard remains solvent, which is great, and are open for business. But we have many kitchens that have been dispatched already to Homebase, in addition to the kitchens we have ready for dispatch, but they remain unpaid for by Homebase. Well, that's not good news, is it, Patricia?
No, that's not good news. That's another layer to
this. Yeah, another layer.
Okay. I'm laughing because I can't cry. Yeah, that's serious. Yeah.
Patricia, I hope you're over your illness. I really do. And I hope this thing sorts itself out as soon as possible. That's Patricia Helovic. Joe at RT.ie. 51551 is our text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Back to the backbone of Irish democracy, the canvasser, the loneliness of the long-distance canvasser. And yesterday, a couple of people, Harry was his name, primarily from Tala, Harry was saying, don't come near my hall door, I have a big sign up saying no junk mail, and that includes, election material. Eric.
Hello, Joe. Good afternoon.
Stand chest out and defend the election literature, please. You are not junk mail.
We are not junk mail. Junk mail is commercial stuff. It's selling goods and services. We are about the democracy, about where the world is going, where Ireland, who's going to run the next government. So it's about democracy, and therefore it's not junk mail as we understand it.
And a rough guess, how many percentage-wise letterboxes that have those signs, no junk mail?
Well, my feeling is it's about 50%, if not more. It's very, very high. Yes, we see it all the time. So if we were to not put in our literature, we wouldn't be just dropping literature at all.
Eric, 50% of the country are curmudgeons.
I know, yes.
They don't want anything in their hall door.
Yes, I was wondering about that because, you know, we are about democracy, about who's going to run the country, and they should be interested in who's going to be our next TDs. It's not about selling services. So it's very important information in the current world.
You see, I had this conversation with Harry yesterday, and I said he could be missing out on it. I don't want Chinese Day, I don't want delivery services, I don't want cleaning services. I said, but Harry, you could be missing out on the best chicken balls in Ireland. Like, what's the harm? What's the harm in... I hate the phrase. What's the harm in getting a leaflet? But usually, because they do the leafleting, usually from a small business trying to get up on their legs.
Well, if you get so much, I have get quite a bit of junk mail in that tense. You can get a lot of information and... it's paper as well. So, yes, I can see where Harry is coming from, but I would feel that we're not junk mail and he should be interested in the information that we're supplying.
Well, Eric, you ignore that. That's what you're saying.
Yes, we've made a decision in our party that if we come across no junk mail, we will put our literature in. But if it goes beyond that and things like letters only or no flyers or leaflets or things like that, if people put an extra...
No unstamped material. But then again, on post-deliver election material, which is not stamped per se, they do it as a job lot. Obviously, it's quicker anyway.
That's only in a very small number.
Have you ever seen a sign up saying no election propaganda?
Yes, so we've certainly seen very, very few. No election propaganda, no election literature, you know, handwritten or quite separate. And yes, we wouldn't go near that door.
Have you ever been spoken to through the bell on the hall door? This is a new phenomenon.
Oh, I have. Okay. A couple of times, yes. And now we're getting this sort of disembodied voice where somebody's upstairs in the back bedroom. They can, maybe they're working from home and they can see us.
Yeah.
And they don't want to come to the door. And we get this voice from this bell at the door. So it's a bit disconcerting talking to them. And once or twice then, if you've left and you haven't closed the gate, they'll roar at you through the disembodied voice. Please close the gate. Which is very embarrassing.
Oh, my God.
So we've
Please mind the gap.
Absolutely.
And if I would have thought, if I was working in the box room all day on Zoom calls or pretending to be on Zoom calls in me boxer shorts but a shirt and tie from me waist up, I'd be glad every now and again if someone knocked at the door for a little chat.
Yeah, absolutely, Joe. And I found actually it was mentioned about loneliness, old people.
Yeah.
The odd time an older person would come to the door.
Brilliant.
And you could see they want to chat.
Brilliant.
And they talk about their issues and you may not be getting their vote, but just as a fellow human being, you do feel, yes, that might be the only person that they've talked to. And
you enjoy canvassing. Do you enjoy canvassing, Eric?
Generally, I do, yes.
Okay.
People are pretty civil. The odd time people will close the door on you. And
but
compare
and contrast with previous elections.
Yes, it's mixed. It's hard to say. Possibly less interaction, but it's hard to say, really, Joel.
But with more people working from home, with more people with their camera doorbells, surely you're getting your canvassing during the day is a little bit more productive.
Well, that's a very good point. I would have thought so, Joe, but I'm finding quite a lot of doors. Yeah, the door isn't answered. And you can see the car there in the driveway and maybe a light on the hallway. They're not coming to the door.
Yeah, I know. So we used to do it ourselves. We used to be sent out to the hall door for the rent man or Harry Golden or whatever. And we say, me mammy told me to tell you she's not in. Anyway, stay there, Eric. At Dolores. Are you going out today, Eric, in the weather? Well, it's not that bad.
Well, I was going down this afternoon, but I've held off to talk to you, Joe. So
that's good. That's good public duty, Eric. Thank you very much. Dolores.
Hi, Joe.
Are you a canvasser?
Yeah, I was out today. I was out yesterday and the day before, Joe. Yeah.
What reception are you getting, Dolores?
No, well, I think most people are just so lovely, Joe. And you very rarely get somebody who is out and out, sort of.
That's good. Isn't that good?
No, it's lovely. I think people are more engaged actually this time.
Wow, okay.
Which, it's great.
I know it's hard. I know even in Vox Pops it's very hard to get a picture. But what are people bringing up generally on the doorstep? Insofar as you can
tell. It's the usual, Joe. I mean, it's you know, it is housing, obviously. Yeah. And that would be, I think, number one.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah, but I had just rung in and contacted you because I had heard Harry on the show saying that
Harry
he was still receiving the leaflets.
Yeah.
And similar to your last caller, I was just going to explain to people that the no junk mail doesn't really apply to the election leaflets, the political parties, all of that, because, you know, that they're not considered junk because they do serve the important purpose to inform people about who's going to represent them in the new government of the country. So they're able to have a think and then they can exercise their democratic right to vote and have a say in who they want to represent them. But if people didn't but I think your last caller mentioned that if people don't want to receive the leaflets, people just have to specify that they don't want political leaflets.
Okay.
And every candidate and party respects this.
But do you ever get such a specification, Dolores?
I did get one yesterday, Joe.
Okay, talk to Joe. Tell me.
I don't know if I can say it on air.
Of course you can. Of course you can.
No, I don't think I can.
Give us a clue. It's not the F word, is it?
No.
No, you can't say the F word.
No. Well, I won't say it, Joe, really, because it's just that no election bleep and have a nice day. So, you know, you have to smile at some of it. And you respect it too, Joe. You're not going to, you know, they're having a bit of a laugh.
So someone actually wrote. Was that a handwritten sign?
It was handwritten, and that's all people, you know, the way these
okay.
no jump
And the
mails,
handwritten sign
them.
Said no election, and then it wasn't a four-letter word, it was a five-letter word.
It was a five-letter word.
More suited to the bathroom in the house than any other part of the building.
You're trying to draw me out
No, I'm just trying to work out who would write that.
I don't want to lower the tone.
No, I'd say
probably a young person, and they had just...
Okay.
I mean, a lot of people are disillusioned with politics. We all accept that.
Of course.
I mean, I'm only involved so recently myself because I'm not here to promote any party or candidate.
Yeah.
I will stress that, but I just do feel the person I'm kind of canvassing for, it has got integrity, and so therefore I feel, look, do something, you know,
I don't think anyone can say... Given looking at the debate the other night with Katie, 10 different political parties, 10, the leaders of 10 different political groupings in some cases. So we've plenty of choice. Dolores, so you are canvassing at the minute, but you're canvassing for the individual rather than the party.
And in the main,
people are friendly.
People are lovely, and I think they appreciate being included, really, because a lot of people might say, I haven't heard, I haven't seen anybody, nobody's called me, and they feel a little bit put out by that, which is fair enough.
Yeah, that's true, actually,
I think they appreciate the effort, and, you know, you get a few sort of sympathetic smiles because you're out in the hailstones and the rain of the last few days, and people, I think just there is a nice atmosphere, and people do appreciate that they are being included. And, you know, you're encouraging them to feel that sense of belonging and a kind of an ownership of their own country.
In a democracy,
that they have a voice.
Yeah. Remember, the Chinese and the North Koreans and the Iranians and the Iraqis, they improved their economy dramatically. But the thing they will not loosen up on is the... is democracy and dissent. Dissent is different political parties. So it's a very, very valuable part of our lives. Stay there, Dolores. Joe at rt.ie 51551. Paul.
Yes, Joe, how are you?
You're a canvasser. How are you getting on this trip?
Very good, actually. Good. Very, very good. It's very, very... most people are very welcoming.
That's good.
They like a bit of banter and all that kind of stuff.
And compare and contrast to previous... going round the houses.
I think it's actually more welcoming this time around.
Okay, I think so. That's been a consistent theme of.
I think it is. Yeah. In quite a few places, we've been offered a cup of tea and use of the bathroom if we want to use the bathroom.
That's basic civility. Yeah, that's appreciated. Yeah. And Paul, compared to previous elections, can you give me a comparison? Is it friendlier? Or?
Oh, much more friendlier this time around.
Okay. Wow.
Much more friendly.
I wonder what all the cephalogists and the commentators and the columnists will make of that. The electorate are much more friendly, what does that mean?
Anyway, not for us
to discuss at this time. Paul, you're worried about the weather at the weekend.
Well, can I mention something before I got on
to
that? One of the things quite a few people have mentioned to us is... after the election is over and they get a certain length of time to take down their posters and that kind of stuff. And they're complaining about all the cable ties that's left on the polls.
Because they don't degrade.
A lot of people mention that. No, they're not happy for it. And the other thing I found...
Yeah, so what's your point? You're saying take down your cable ties.
Oh, yeah, take them down. It's very easy. Bring your scissors with you or something like that, just cut them off.
I find also
people that are living on their own, they like to stay and chat with you for a while, you know, not about the election, but about everyday
life,
things, you know.
Yeah.
They like a bit of banter on that. There was one particular woman there, she had a dog that kept barking while I was there, you know. While we were there, and I just said to her in a funny way, I said, "I'm also doubling up. I'm checking on dog licenses."
Oh, good luck!
Oh, I have one of them. I have one of them as well. She says, "I have one of them as well. Do you want to see it?" So yeah.
You should have said to her, "That's a black and white dog license. You have a colour dog. That dog is 14 shades of brown." Okay, so you enjoy it, Paul?
I am enjoying it. Yeah, no, I'm not looking forward to the weather the weekend.
I was going to say to you.
Anyway, We'll see how it goes. I think where I am, this half of the country isn't getting it too bad, but down south, it's forecast is bad. Yeah.
Well, tomorrow week, the canvassing is effectively over, isn't it?
You're not allowed
canvass outside polling booths, are you not?
No, not the day before, anyway. Yeah. No, you're not.
The day of, even.
Yeah.
I used to love that when they were canvassing outside.
I think they'll probably wind down about the day before, you know, or 2 days before.
Okay.
Well, if they haven't got the message out by then,
that's true. People can't say they're not informed, especially if they're listening to radio and television and indeed reading the papers. Okay, Paul, good to meet you. John is in County Meath.
Thanks, Paul.
Safe travelling. Safe canvassing. You're a canvasser, John.
Yes, indeed, Joe. How are you?
And are you a newcomer to this skill? This craft?
No, I'm probably close to 50 years at.
Wow. And have you noticed, first of all, an increase in the number of these no junk mail signs on letterboxes?
I certainly have, but not to the extent that your previous or two previous callers ago said. I would say 10-15%. You might get 4 or 5 in every estate you go into. But then we're rural canvassing. We're in canvassing in towns and rural constituencies. You know, I wouldn't be in the city. I haven't been in a city since.
So you say in rural areas, 10-15% no junk mail. And you ignore it?
I personally do on the instructions of the candidate.
Now, have you ever seen makey up signs like the one that was referred to earlier by Dolores? We don't want any of your old rhymes with white.
I was indeed. I only very recently passed, came to a door where there was a very colourful poster up with, if you're a canvasser or you're delivering leaflets or you're canvassing as a TD or councillor, please do not knock on our door. And now that you have taken the time to read this, please off.
Okay. And did you off?
I did. I was very tempted to knock, but unfortunately there was no car around the door or that. I wanted to go along and say, we are doing something that people are entitled to hear from candidates. People are complaining they don't hear from candidates. People are complaining, and I have heard it on your show yesterday and the day before. People said, no one ever knocks on my door. But, I mean, we won't knock on doors if we see this, you know. And I think there's some people do and some people don't, but I certainly wouldn't. If I saw no junk mail or not to knock on the door, I wouldn't. Not too far from where I'm currently sitting, I read a beautiful notice on a door where there was an invalided person in the house, and they said, please do not knock at the door because I'm an invalid and it will take me a period of time to get to the door. And I read their article and I left a note for them and all of that. And I thought that was beautiful. It's the first time I've ever seen it in all my years canvassing. Yeah.
And John, this time round, people friendlier or no difference?
To be very honest with you, I find that people are more argumentative.
Okay.
People are more inclined to get involved with you, particularly if
they have an
angle. You know what I mean? As I agreed with your researcher, we don't mention parties I'm canvassing for non-party, whatever the case may be. But I notice that people are more inclined to take you on. And I tend to deal with local issues rather than national issues when you're dealing locally. And if I get a rather awkward person and they're talking about something, well, you may have to argue with them. And I always try and bring it back down to local politics.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
National politics is one thing, but everything is local when it comes to politics.
Okay.
You know, and I tend to stay away from the parish pump. You know, the parish pump is one thing, but you tend to go, you know, fairly global in terms of your county and your town or whatever the case may be.
And you remember the first election that you canvassed in, John?
I do. A fellow called John Bruton was running for elections, and a man called Dinny Farley. Yeah, both of them long passed.
Okay.
And then
John is only in the last 12 months.
Well, John subsequently passed, recently passed. But John and Farley, Dinny Farley's a long time dead. His son eventually went to politics, and you know, there was a I remember a while, and I went Dublin West, Galway East, down the country. I travelled down the country to do, back in the day when I was young and hardier and able to do these things. I went round the country doing them. Yeah, I loved it. I actually did, and I met some wonderful people.
Great. And would you do by-elections?
Oh yeah, so the by-elections was off. Yeah, definitely.
Oh,
yeah,
they were the big thing.
I did the Dublin West by-election. I did the Galway East by-election. I did one down the country. I just can't remember.
Are they harder? They're more intense, aren't they?
Well, they're more intense and they're very local, and the politics is very local, you know.
Yeah, But you enjoy it, John. And yeah, I think you're good at it.
Oh, I like it. Yeah, I do. I like it. Yeah, I think it's an important aspect of our political system.
Yeah.
I've been to America, and I've been in America while this is going on in America, and I have some very good friends over there that was formerly in the Senate and formerly in the House.
Wow.
And they are mesmerised by the way we do things here and how we do them and the count and all of that.
Well, some of the signs up I saw in the US media during the recent general election, as they call it, the presidential, some of the signs in some of the gardens were quite nasty.
Oh, well, I mean, I think it's a different level over there. And once again, we won't get into the issues about it, but, I mean, like, Trump has brought a whole new dimension to
discourse
over there.
But then John, yesterday in North Dublin, a semi-detached house, I saw a banner which was 2/3 the height of the house and the full width, the full width of the house, okay?
Yes.
Say it cost them a few bob now. And I won't name them, obviously. It named three political parties, okay?
Yes.
In bold. Printed, not handwritten as you occasionally. Printed, and beside one political party was crook, beside another political party was liar, and beside another political party was fascist. And I just thought that was distasteful, to say the least.
Well, it's to say the least, because, I mean, the person that put those up, or the person that authorised the putting up of those posters, certainly has to be questioned. And
well, they're allowed, in fairness, we live in the democracy. They say it's my house, I'll hang what I want from my house.
Yeah, well, you see, that's one argument.
Okay.
But at the same time, if you're teaching young children or you're bringing young adults and you have that sort of an attitude and you're trying to force an issue on a person, well, then I don't think that's fair.
Someone said to me, it has happened.
Go on, sorry, Joe.
Well, now, looking at the 10 political parties represented and all the groups represented, I don't think anyone, in fairness, can call any other political grouping, no matter where they come from on the spectrum, fascist in this country. We don't want that, and I don't think it is here by a long shot. But anyway, John...
Speaking of the 10 the other night, I thought that we should have probably seen those 10 broken into 2 5s, because I would have loved to have seen what the individuals... smaller parties talking among themselves and see what they come up with, and then the 5 bigger parties, you know, letting them trash it out with each other. I thought the 5, we call them the minnows of the night, they can get a fair crack at the whip.
Yeah.
And only for Paddy Tobin got stuck in. I mean, he probably would have been there
But they were all there at least. But anyway, and there's more to come. There's more to come. We've a week
there's
in
more to come, Joe.
John, do you wear out shoe leather?
I've done, I'd say, at this stage, yeah.
Do you count your... Do you do your steps? Do you count your steps?
No, I never think of it.
I should. I'd love to see the number. Yeah. I'd say you do. I'd say you're a fit man. You sound a fit man. That's John in County Meath. Joe at rt.ie, 51551, text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
We are, I know, we are consumed by the weather, and even from the moment Alan O'Reilly came on yesterday to give us an update of Carlo weather, to give us an update, people are consumed by the weather. We thought we'd ask Johnny Dillon. He's a folklorist archivist in UCD. Johnny, good afternoon.
Hey Joe, how's things?
Is it a national sport, the weather?
It is, I think. Yeah, it's always weather has always been an immediate concern, I think, for Irish people. I suppose if you think, I mean, nowadays, in many ways, because of technological developments, mm-hmm. we're less reliant on sort of reading signs and interpretations of the natural world around us. But for our forebears, they relied a lot on traditional economy. Like, you know, crops could fail with sudden frosts, yeah. or for fishermen going to sea, there was a danger about storms and waves and so on. So I suppose there was a lot depending on the weather, and at the same time it's notoriously unreliable, so great efforts were made by our forebears to sort of foresee what the weather held in store for us. That's what we see a lot in traditional customs surrounding the weather. So I'd say yes, it's absolutely a national sport for us. Yeah,
and you say weather accounts, this is a breathtaking count. Weather accounts for over 20,000 stories contained in the National Folklore Ark Collection compiled in 1935.
Yeah, well, yeah. So the National Folklore Collection, we're based in UCD. Yeah. We're a folklore archive that kind of grew out of the work of the Irish Folklore Commission, where folklore collectors were tasked with travelling the country and interviewing ordinary men and women about the Irish people, about their inner lives and experiences and traditions, customs, memories and identity, basically. And so we have that material online now, duchas.ie, D-U-C-H-A-S.ie, where okay. people can read, in particular from the school's collection. So there was a scheme from 1937 to 39 where school children were tasked with collecting from their parents and grandparents. And one of the topics that they collected about was weather lore, local signs, and sort of the interpretation of the landscape for weather. So there's about over 6,000 stories and about 20,000 references to the word weather on the website.
And are they, so what are pishogues? Is there weather pishogues?
A pishogue is sort of the English language equivalent word, would be like a superstition. So I suppose we wouldn't really use the term, the popular belief and custom, I suppose, would be what we'd be looking, what we would. I mean, often these sort of terms are, or customs are often presented as a sort of hodgepodge of like semi-ignorant or superstitious kind of odds and ends. But actually, weather customs and traditions reveal a lot about the inner life of the Irish people, about our connection to Ireland, to the land around us, to our landscape, to nature, and the way that either through premonitions or just observing the natural environment and changes in it, that people would acquire skill in essentially reading the weather and predicting it when we didn't have, you know, technology, essentially.
But any farmer now who wants to know the weather this evening just has to check his smartphone. And you get he or she'll get it fairly quick. But the wasn't it the movements of animals and certain directions and sounds or whatever? Is that true?
Exactly.
They were indicators.
They were, like, I think, I mean, people would naturally go on to met.ie, and at the same time, I think farmers and fishermen in particular would have a lot of their own signs that they would trust themselves. Like, these things aren't just in the past; these are things that are from present. So, yeah, as you mentioned there, I suppose often what would be regarded would be, say, the changes in the behaviour of animals. So, and that is either from outside or in the house even. So, for example, a cat or a dog that had its back to the fire all day, or that, you know, kept coming into the house no matter how many times you kicked it out.
What is a cat with the back to the fire? What does that tell me?
I think, that was often betokened as a sign of sort of bad weather, a change, maybe a storm coming, maybe snow, frost, or just a change in the weather, or cold, basically. Or sometimes a blue flame coming on the peat fire might be token sort of rain, frost, snow, a storm. There's a natural pessimism, I think, in a lot of our
weather
customs.
Okay, well, normally it's correct.
and
the law of averages,
bad,
If the cat, I thought that was the cat's natural position, as close to the fire as possible. What about sounds?
So, sounds. So even, say, the sound of a river. Say the change in the sound of a river or the change in the sound of, say, if a curlew or a bird's call sounded particularly close, or if they were heard kind of whistling or singing more loudly than usual. So sometimes if the air is very, very still, maybe sound will travel further and so on. But that, yeah, the sound of a river or the appearance of hills or mountains, mm-hmm. they looked further away than usual. The colour of the sky, sort of. So there's a few different things that we can look at between, like I said, the appearance of the landscape, sounds, the behaviour of animals. Even for elderly people, their bones might ache, their eyes might become sore before bad weather and so on and so forth. So people would, yeah, look around to sort of read the signs around them. Say, even if there was sometimes a large crop of haws that had come on the hawthorns, that at times was seen as betokening snow. The idea being that sort of God's providence would afford the birds more, it would kind of give them more berries before the snow came, before a harsh winter came and so on.
So there might be some science in it, Johnny.
I think the way to think about it is that, I mean, our forebears were no slouches, you know.
Yeah,
they weren't idiots. And so they didn't have technology in the way that we do today. But what they did have was natural sense and a close connection to the landscape around them and a recognition of the signs and, in particular, sudden changes. So, like I said, in that if animals usually behave this way and suddenly they're behaving this other way, or the looking to sort of changes, like I said, in the landscape, the colour of the sky, the shine on rocks, the distance of mountains, the appearance of the moon or the sun, and the movements of fog, the direction of the wind, all of these sorts of things would, there was a sort of natural, just in terms of observation, that you could sort of tell, okay, there's a change coming and it's, there's an element of sort of, it's analogous in a way to the scientific method. Other parts of it then would be more emotional sort of resonance or symbolic meaning of the kind of associated with certain times of the year. So we have in terms of, say, St. Bridget's Day, that Gachre Law Omelosa Machagas Lamele Hainig, every other day from her festival on and half of her own day, the weather would sort of slowly start to get better, basically.
Okay.
So there's a range of approaches from, natural observation to premonitions. And then the idea that certain people could control the weather, that certain women could cause storms certain women would sort of sell to sailors, and particularly ropes with knots tied in them. And depending on how much wind was required, you would undo these knots and the wind would be raised.
I remember in the last election in the USA, was a Congresswoman Marjorie Greene said the hurricanes were caused by the Biden government, by people.
the belief that actually people cause, or that nature mm-hmm. or disorder in nature is sometimes a reflection of disorder in sort of social states is not uncommon. So, for example, in Ireland, there's a popular sort of maritime legend, Ba Fruclish, the drowning or the ship sinking witch, and that's a legend that's found in Scotland and Iceland. And relates in particular to a woman, a poor sort of widow woman, who is mistreated by fishermen who refuse to give her some of their catch. Basically, they're selfish with their catch and they don't give her any. And she took a tub of water and put some eggshells in it or feathers in it and began an incantation and sort of started stirring the water around. And the eggshell or the feather is sort of swept to the bottom of this bowl. And meanwhile, a storm kind of whips up out at sea. And the fishermen who had offended her basically were drowned. I mean, we have newspaper articles relating to that from the 19th century, and Donegal in particular, and sort of tunes named after it. So I think these things are often sort of, there's an element of jest about the way that they're described. And yet there are old ideas in terms of that social discord, or that it can sometimes be reflected in nature.
Mm-hmm.
The same way, say, with the saints in, say, the early saints in Ireland were, you know, believed to say it could rain or snow, but they wouldn't be affected by it. Or if their psalm book fell into the water, it would remain dry and things like this. So there's an emotional or symbolic reasoning that we find in the way that people represent and understand and think about our landscape.
And what about red sky at night, shepherds alight? Is that normally reliable, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few. Yeah, Darrick Shearer's Green the Morgh, Darrick Harris Green the Monagher. So like kind of red sky in the west, sun tomorrow, red sky in the east, green sun the day after tomorrow.
Yeah.
So yeah, or a red sky at night, shepherd's delight, red sky in the morning, shepherd's scorn, that sort of thing. So yeah, there are sort of, like I said earlier, there are interpretations based on just mere natural observances, which are not unreliable, I suppose.
But all I'm just thinking, because we had it, it's been a recurring theme, many that record on the programme, when you weave them all together, as Donald Trump used to say. But one of the recurring themes is that the smartphone, and you know all the argument about the pouches, that's separate, but the smartphone, it's put an end to whistling as a form of entertainment among young people. The smartphone, I presume, will put an end to pishogues, because people simply... a lot of people are interested in the weather, as we know. They look at their smartphone. They don't need to consult the pishogue from their distant memory.
I know what you mean. I mean, certainly I think technological advancement has obviously brought a lot by way of, improved sort of quality of life in ways, and yet it's also stripped us of something. So I think there's a greater disconnect and anxiety, a sort of a nihilism that can attend to that sometimes, with the way that technology has sort of divorced us in ways from our either traditional inheritance or culture and nature in many ways. But at the same time, I think culture is always changing, traditions always change, and continuity and change is an essential part of folk tradition. And primarily, I think for those aspects of human life that have an element of risk attached to them, or that they're really important, so think of birth, death, betrothal, marriage, course, economic prosperity, they're always attended by a range of customs and beliefs and popular tradition that try to answer or respond to the anxieties that people have around those. So in terms of, say, are we making a long journey? Will we face rain or sun? Mm-hmm. Are we sort of summer will we have? What sort of winter will we have? We're always reading nature for signs. And I think, yes, I would say that technology changes and in many ways impacts negatively on sort of our forms of well-being in many ways.
The other thing, I'm just thinking of that wonderful project. What was it, 1935 you alluded to, where children...
1937 to 39.
They had copybooks and they're in the school and they were asked to sit with their grandparents or whatever and some of their grandparents would have been quite elderly, obviously, but some of them would have been probably able to talk about the aftermath of the famine. But how do we archive stuff now with nobody writes anything down?
I know what you mean. So, the school's collection was an amazing scheme. I mean, we have all that material online now and people can go on and read. And I would urge people to go on and read about, I mean, one of the ways of sort of reconnecting people with their own local environments and their past, their own memory and identity, is to go through and see, well, what did people in your local area think and believe? What were the conditions of culture there? Nowadays, we still carry out projects. We do work with sort of community groups and projects, but we don't have sort of folklore collectors operating on the same scale as they were. And it's an important point that you make, because tradition and folk tradition isn't something that sort of stopped in 1935 or 1939. It carries on today. And what's important in many ways are the ways that we use the past in terms of sort of navigating the anxieties and complexities of the present. And I think especially with technology changing, it's more important than ever that we look past for a way forward,
Like many children even keep scrapbooks now, you know what I mean? Tickets and photographs and receipts and paper wrappers and even how many people, because we're talking about it, you know, Jen, many people keep election literature. I do every time. Yeah, I put them in my scrapbook just because I think they're fascinating. Yeah, but anyway.
There's a lot of ephemeral sort of records that are in danger of disappearing that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Johnny, can the name of that website again that people can access if they have it?
Duchas.ie, Duchas.ie. Or come in and visit the National Folklore Collection.
Oh, you can visit. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Are you based in Belfield or in the city? Are you not based in Merrion
Square? We're based in Belfield. No, we're based. They were in the 30s in the city centre, but we're based in Belfield, so you can come in and make an appointment.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay, Johnny, fascinating. Thanks indeed. It's Johnny Dillon. Johnny is a folklorist, archivist in UCD. What a fantastic role, and I hope the job sounds. Well, it is. It's fascinating as it sounds. Joe at RT.ie. Remember talking about our own folklore 50 years ago. 50 years ago. Gay Bourne went into Grafton Street on one Christmas Eve, and it was 1974, and he started a tradition which has kept going, bar a couple of years because of the pandemic. but 50 years ago it started. If you have any photographs, any memorabilia, any prize you won even in 1974, or indeed beyond, or if you were there in 19, we already have one person who was there. In fact, he was working on the gig, the great Kevin Fowdy, who was on the gig, who was with us for many years, and he's coming in to mark the 50 years since the first Christmas Eve, where we will be outside the Bailey on Duke Street, just on Marks and Spencer's corner there on Grafton Street. Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe is in Cork. Joe.
Oh, hello, Joe. How are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm not too bad. I was listening to all these stories there about canvassing and all that stuff.
Yes.
All very serious stuff, like. Well, I did a favour for a friend of mine one time who was quite political, you know?
Okay.
And I went out and did a bit of canvassing. And it was at night. It was at night. And I walked along and I was doing my change, didn't mind it at all. And up to this door, kind of a sliding glass door, you know, before the real door.
Yes.
I pulled that back.
Yes.
Gave a light knock. And just as I did,
yes,
I noticed a sign. A sign there saying, canvassers don't knock, you know?
Good man.
So I thought.
Good man, yes.
I didn't hear it in the side.
Okay.
Although I did actually hear a voice in the back. I said, I'll get away.
Yeah.
But when I looked down, I tried to move. But when I looked down, my feet were stuck in his wet cement. Oh, my God.
So the householder wasn't being rude. It was just a warning. No, he should have.
That was right. Yeah,
so don't knock on the door, because if you knock on the door, you're going to be buried. You'll have
mind you,
cement
he
boots.
He should have locked it.
Okay.
I was stuck in it, and I was saying, "Oh, don't come out!" And I could hear the voices inside, like, so I trying to get my feet out. I got my feet out, and then I took back the card because it was halfway into the letterbox. I took out the card,
and I
noticed there was another card from another political party there. So I said, "I'll leave that." They blame them, and I went back down the path and got away with it. But I'm just thinking now, then talking to you.
Yes.
If the man is listening,
okay, your footprints.
He said, "God Almighty, that's the bee that's slipping stood on my cement."
And I had to do it again the following morning.
That's it, Joe. It's only a quick story, just to liven her up a bit. My granddaughter's here. I just want to say hello to you. Go on, say hello.
Okay. What's her name?
Hi,
what's your name?
Maria.
Maria, how are you, Maria?
I'm good.
Are you in school these days, or college, or what do you do?
No, I'm in sixth class.
Oh, well done. Sixth class. And what's your teacher's name?
Well, she's nearly as big as myself now, for God's sake.
Okay,
like, you know?
But, okay, Maria, well done, and, Maria. Which you're, that's Joe, you're the granddad.
I
know you're the dad.
Granddad, yeah.
Oh, you're the granddad.
I'm
okay.
Home there.
Well done.
I just started leaving her up because it's all very serious stories.
Yeah,
like,
okay. Are you enjoying it? What do you think of the election so far, Joe?
I always vote, but I don't take any notice of it, really. Like.
Okay.
And everybody that comes to the door, I'm polite and I say, "Oh, yeah, I voted for you. That's right, yeah. Give me a little chat." Like,
but you see, you know what I was wondering, Joe? We'd have to ask one of our experts. If the weather on Friday week... Okay.
Yeah.
If the weather on Friday week is tumultuous, is deep,
yeah,
which can happen in November.
Could, of course.
Is there any facility for postponing the
no,
vote?
No, I don't think there is.
I don't think there is. It's just whoever can make it out on the day on their take.
Yeah, yeah.
And the best thing probably, if it does snow on November 29th, go to your nearest poll, take down the election poster. Because they're made of kind of... And you sit on them and get someone to pull you down to the on the ice.
Slide along, yes, like, you know?
Yes.
Just stay away from wet cement, that's all. Like. Don't go into any wet cement.
Okay, that's a good warning.
Okay,
Joe.
Have a nice day,
Joe,
okay?
And Maria, thanks indeed. Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And there we were talking about whistling, and we're contacted by the wonderful Honor Heffernan. Honor, good afternoon.
Morning, Joe. How are you?
Good. And give me the connection. People know you as an incredible singer in a particular style, a very accessible style, but a very wonderful style. What in the name? How does whistling come into it? I know we've been talking about it for nearly a week.
Yeah. My sister, I was saying to Rachel earlier, my sister is an amazing whistler.
Wow.
She can whistle arias from operas. You know, she's incredible. She's not the kind of, like Rachel was saying, does she know she's whistling? I think she does, you know, she's not kind of whistling, but she's an incredible, I can't whistle to save my life. It's incredible. I just cannot whistle. I can whistle, you know, I can make a sound, but I couldn't string three or four notes together.
But you put a show together.
We did. Well, I didn't. Trevor Knight, my husband year-long husband. Wrote this. He's mad about Dorothy Parker and her sayings and her writing and her poetry. And he put this show together quite a few years ago. And when I met him in 2015, he said, I have this stuff. Would you like to listen to it, this music? And I said, yeah, I'd love to hear it. And the minute I heard it, I went, oh, my God, this is incredible. And one of the songs is called The Whistling Girl. And it's Dorothy Parker talking about, you know, she'd rather be bad than live a timid life. An amazing woman. But she has a saying. I have it here. I sent it into you yesterday.
A whistling woman.
That's it.
And a crowing hen.
Is neither used to God nor man. I mean, she's amazing. She thinks like if they pooled their emotions, they wouldn't fill a teaspoon.
She said
beauty's only skin deep, but ugly goes clean to the bone. I mean, God almighty, you'd hate to, you know, actors used to hate to see her come into the theatre because she worked for The New Yorker and Vogue and she did reviews. And she said of Katharine Hepburn on a production or something she'd seen, she ran the full gamut of emotions from A to B.
I love it.
Brilliant. Yeah, she's brilliant. So we did this show. We toured around with it, The Whistling Girl. We were actually in the Irish Arts Centre in New York. And we were in Paris or in London and Belgrade, and then we toured it all around Ireland. And hopefully we'll bring it on the road again. We're working on something else at the moment, the Devil's Spine Band. We have a tour next year. That's all.
Don't whistle.
I don't whistle.
Okay.
That's it. That's really pathetic. And you know, somebody heard my sister whistling, a musician. And he said, "Wow. That's a sign of a really good musician."
Well, another people are getting in touch with Dorothy Parker. She's funnier than Groucho.
All right.
Dorothy Parker, I like to have a martini. Two at the very most. After three, I'm under the table. After four,
I'm under the host.
So glad you said that, Anna. So glad you finished that line.
She also worked in an office with her very, very close friend, Richard Benchley.
Okay.
And she was mad about him. And she had a quote, "This office is so close, this is so small, if it was any smaller, it would be adultery." I mean, she just had the most incredible mind. And she had a really hard life, you know.
Did she? Your The Whistling Girl, is it based on her life?
All her work.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
All her work.
Wow.
All her songs and poems and... There's a couple of, she was a real, she was a great activist and she supported the Spanish people during the Spanish
Civil
Revolution.
War. Yeah, yeah.
She wrote the Civil War. She wrote a most beautiful monologue. So I do that as well.
You married last year and I missed the wedding by a day or a week.
Yeah.
I missed it by a week I was opening an art
That's
exhibition
right.
down in Wexford.
Yeah.
Is your Trevor the expert in Ireland?
I don't know if he's the expert in Ireland, but I think he's fairly close.
Yeah.
Himself and Gay Woods. Gay Woods.
Great talent.
They,
yeah, yes.
They, yeah, she is amazing. They did a few of the things earlier on. And then Trevor put a show together with Susanna Derrickson and a couple of other... Ingrid Craigie, actually, as well.
Oh, yeah.
Where they
did
a great
actress,
few.
I
mean, this was like 12, long before I met him, you know. But this is another one. Money can't buy health, but I'd settle for a diamond-studded wheelchair. That's one of her. I don't know much about being a millionaire, but I bet I'd be darling at it.
I see another one coming.
Three things in a man: he must be handsome, ruthless, and stupid.
Time may be a great healer, but it's a lousy beautician.
That's right.
I know, she was amazing, yeah. Yeah.
And I'd say peripherally a lot of people would have heard of Dorothy.
Oh, yeah. Well, I hadn't heard, I'd only heard her quotes. And funnily enough, I had been singing one song that in the old-fashioned show that I do with Jim Doherty called I Wished on the Moon. Anyway, it was one she wrote for a Hollywood thing. She hated Hollywood. She went there for a while, but she hated it. But she actually wrote a song, and I was singing it. But I just knew that song, and I knew her quotes. I knew nothing else about her. And then when I met Trevor, obviously, I learned an awful lot about her.
Well, that was a lovely chat up line from Trevor, wasn't it? Do you know anything about Dorothy Parker?
No, he said, I have some songs.
Oh, really?
That you might like to listen to.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
I worked.
I have some songs above in the loft.
Yeah, like coming to see my etchings.
Well done. Stay with us, Honor, because we're still talking about with youth contacts about whistling. Joe Cairns. Joseph.
Hi, how are you? Hi, Joe, how are you?
You used to play the tin whistle.
Yeah, well, no, I was trying. I was trying to play the whistle, and I could never kind of, I could never get to a level that I wanted to, so I kind of cut out the middleman and got rid of the whistle, and I just did it on my own. So that's how that started.
Brilliant. You cut out. You weren't great at the tin whistle, so you got rid of the tin whistle.
Well, I tell you what it was. When I was younger, I was playing in trad sessions. And in where I grew up in Bettystown. And I always wanted to play the Lonesome Boatswain. The Lonesome Boatswain was my favourite song, always is and still is. And so I'd bring the whistle in, and I'd be learning. And by the time it was coming around to me to actually do the Lonesome Boatswain, I kind of lost confidence in doing it on the whistle in front of a group of musicians. So I ended up actually learning the Lonesome Boatswain in the gents' bathroom of Gilnan's Cottage Inn in Laytown because there was a good echo in there. And as I was going, I was whistling. And eventually I got good enough that it was brought out onto the floor, you know.
And I want to come back to the Lonesome Boatman in a minute because I have an idea in my head here. You met your wife in the middle of the ocean. I hope you were on some craft.
Yeah. So I was working on a cruise ship. I was working on cruise lines. And Olivia, my wife, she was a dancer on the same cruise line. So I was there for music reasons. I was playing in the Irish pubs and eventually started getting my hand into fire safety. So while learning fire safety on the ship, I was also playing music on the ship at the same time. And I met my wife there, and she started to play with me as well. So we made a career about it, traveling around the world and playing music with each other. She's from New York. So the whole Irish music scene was new to her, but she's fallen in love with it.
I don't want to let the week pass, and I mentioned Johnny Doohan, obviously, last week as the word came through. I'm also very conscious of that Marini Farta and her family are still searching. They've been on incredible family, incredible, talking about Mara, who's still unfortunately missing at sea. And I'm also very conscious of John Kenny and Margie and the family, and another 66 years of age and passed away. And there's such sadness. Anyway, I know other people are mourning friends and family as well, but I think John Kenny and Johnny Doohan, the creativity. Joe Cairns, given that I am gone a bit, what's that? Is that a canvasser?
Sorry, that's my computer. I thought
it was a canvasser at the hall door on her. Joseph, would you will you do the Lonesome Boatman for us?
Yeah, now bear in mind, Joe, I'm doing this with a guitar on my lap and my phone squashed in between my face and my shoulder.
Yeah, but the main thing is don't go too close. Don't go too close to the mic when you're whistling.
Can I tell you something else? I was in the middle of a manager's meeting this morning, and I was told to rush home and get my guitar. So I'm currently in a boardroom with two of my staff members looking at me. So the pressure's on. Anyway, we'll give it a belt. Here we go.
And I'm thinking, well, we'll dedicate it to Maura, please God, and to Johnny, Johnny's wife, Maureen, and their family, and to John Kenny and his wife, Margie. three beautiful people. And this is, we will think of them and others who are not with us at this time as Joe Cairns plays The Lonesome Boatman. Lovely Joe.
Gorgeous.
Remembering Johnny, John, agus Maude. Honor Heffernan, thank you so much. Joe Cairns, good to meet him, all good for that. We'll be back tomorrow on Sound Isle, McMonagall, broadcast coordinator Shane Galvin, producer Sean O'Gorman. And remember, self-published books, I want to give them a good push. If you have a self-published book, you know we love supporting them, especially in the week coming up to Christmas. Get them into the post ASAP. By the way, on post, if you get into the post office, they have special envelopes, much cheaper than packaging them yourself. But you must attach your details with super glue or staples to the actual book. Okay, thanks indeed. Back tomorrow, 1:45. Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Refresh your home with the latest colours and designs in curtains and bedding, in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.